Would you be brave enough to stay in a haunted hotel room if you knew ahead of time that it was haunted? If so, would you be willing to do it over and over and over again? Today on Homespun Haints, we'll talk to James, who has made it his passion to do just that. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I'm Becky.
I'm Diana.
And today we have James de Beresford on the show. James is a ghost hunter currently located in Wales. Is that a good way to introduce you?
That's accurate, yes.
So, James, I understand that you are working on a book about some of your paranormal experiences.
I do have a book online called An Insider's Guide to Culture Shock, but it's nothing to do with ghosts, which were pretty much my first fixation.
Okay, so I suppose the book is to come then. So you spent a decent amount of time seeking out haunted hotels throughout England, staying the night in those rooms, and then documenting it on video. Can you tell us about some of the things you encountered on your adventures in these hotels?
I was 26 when I stayed in my first haunted hotel, which was the Weston Manor Hotel, which Henry VIII once stayed in. But I didn't pass the whole night there because I was scared out of the room by a floating feather. I'd spent about 4 hours in there on my own, and that was enough. And that's a pity because, you know, it was a really nice room. The honeymoon suite is an incredible wood-paneled room with a four-poster bed and a bathroom that was once part of a medieval chapel, and there are some terrific stories attached to it. One of the chambermaids that I spoke to the next morning told me of how she was manhandled by a ghost called Maud. She was making the bed with her colleague who verified the story, and she suddenly felt herself grabbed and turned around. Well, she went white as a sheet, but then she just said, "Oh, it's only Maud," because the ghost was known about, and many people have stayed in that room and they've been found sleeping in the reception downstairs the next morning.
Can you describe the feather that you said you saw?
Well, this is a long time ago. This is about 16 or 17 years ago, but I was really looking for an excuse to get out of the room. So I was reviewing the footage, and there was what I kind of thought was a white specter or an orb moving across the camera. And we subsequently decided that it was probably a pillow feather. However, having said that, it's online. You can find it on my YouTube channel, Unfinished Television, and decide for yourself.
Well, we'll be sure to include a link to that on the episode show notes. James, I know since that time you've stayed at several haunted hotels where you had more substantial encounters. Can you tell us about some of those?
The next time, I was reading a newspaper, and the article was nothing to do with ghosts. It was about a town that was resisting a supermarket in the high street, because a lot of these high streets are very quaint, and they don't want a big chain coming in, spoiling everything. And there was a photograph attached to the story, which had a picture of the high street, and you could see a Tudor building, which is very common. Actually, this one didn't have exposed timbers, but that's quite normal because as fashions change, they would plaster over them in Georgian times, probably, and they change the windows, and it all sort of actually ends up looking not as Tudor as you think, but it was a Tudor building. As I looked it up yesterday, and it's been a pub since at least 1517.
Very cool.
But actually, by English standards, not remarkable. I don't mean that in a sort of arrogant way.
No, I know. I mean, you're still stumbling over Roman ruins over there, so.
Yeah, we still are, actually. I just saw it in the news. We found a coin of a Roman emperor that was only an emperor for 2 months. Just like, probably wasn't even an emperor when that coin reached British shores. Anyway, I saw that picture of the inn, and I thought, I bet that's haunted. And I was probably inspired because it seemed to me like it was a challenge, an interesting challenge to see if my intuition was correct. I found out what the hotel was called because it wasn't in the article. It was called George, which is a really, again, is just a really standard name for an old English inn/pub. George is, you know, he slew the dragon. He's the patron saint of England. I rang up and I said, what's your haunted room? And they said, well, it's the teardrop room. There's no pause. Now, I had met a woman who lives in Wakefield, which is in Yorkshire. And I said, would you like to go and stay there? And she was up for that. So I went to the George. It was sort of a quaint room, but there were no sort of spooky vibes about it. And now my method of ghost hunting is really just to get on with my business, just to sort of go about my day-to-day existence. I'm not really into that sort of goading the ghosts and trying to get them to communicate. I never really liked that. So we just put our stuff down and went and played pool in a pub and then came back, went to bed, went to sleep. There was no attempt to communicate with the other side. I didn't even know the story that was attached to the room. I didn't want to know it. About 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, I was woken up by my friend. She went to my side of the bed and hugged me, squeezed me quite hard. The reason why she had woken up herself was she had felt a cold, I don't want to say breeze, a sort of cold energy pass through her. But on my side of the bed, the light had come on. It was not fully illuminated. It was just a bedside light with an incandescent bulb. But it had not come on as you would switch a light on. It was sort of like it had a dimmer switch. And the power was turned down to, say, 40%. I remember that it was certainly light enough to give us plenty of light in the room. It was nowhere near full illumination, and it was sort of flickering a little bit. In the morning, I checked the light. I tried to replicate that effect by turning it on, off, and turning just pressing the switch in slightly with my thumb to see if you just pressed it in a bit, would repeat that effect. And of course it didn't. You couldn't do that yourself.
Your friend said that she felt the coldness pass through her. What was that like?
Well, I've had it myself, so I know that it's just like aircon. It's like an aircon unit blowing cold air onto you. It's not an otherworldly sensation. There are plenty of things about the paranormal that are otherworldly. But the specific sensation of a cold draft is actually something that you could replicate with a cold blast of air. The only thing is the draft had come from the left and the window was on the right. So we were under no illusions as to where any cold air may have been coming from, but the window was also closed. People can look up the story of the Teardrop Room. They can find it on the internet. The story is during the Civil War, which is 1640s. It's a bad period for us, not least because it did damage a lot of buildings. But of course, the Reformation did as well. And then you had the Second World War, and then you had town planning. they were all catastrophic for our history, but, you know, a historical fabric. Anyway. There was a brawl in the pub and it was a royalist that got stabbed and he died, and he had a heartbroken love who went to the room, locked herself in, or was locked in the room or whatever. It's the story. I've heard two slightly differing accounts, and it's called the Teardrop Room because she was crying and she dipped her tears in the soot in the fireplace and drew on the walls. When I hear stories like that, if I, it doesn't really affect my, I don't have any expectation. I didn't know actually what was going to happen because I've heard the story afterwards. But if I, by any chance, hear a story in advance, it doesn't really affect my perception, I don't think. That's just a basic, everyday, unspectacular haunting. But I like it as a story because it has all the sort of basic ingredients. It has the things that you might expect, cold drafts, electrics being played with. Those sort of things are very, very common. Actually, it brings me on to the next story. So I sort of gave up ghost hunting for a while because I went to China. But I started ghost hunting in the summers when I came back to England. And in 2010, I went and stayed in the Bear Hotel. Now, the name of the town escapes me, but it's in Oxfordshire. It's actually the birthplace of Winston Churchill. There's a 700-year-old hotel there. And there's a room in that hotel which is said to be haunted by a woman who is looking for her child. The story is she hid her dead baby in one of the walls in the room. It's a very plausible story because in those times, this is about 300 years ago, so people were very poor. I don't know if she murdered the child or it was born out of wedlock or what happened, but there simply wasn't, you know, the support there is today. But this was quite a large room and it was midsummer, very warm, and the windows were closed. The first thing I noticed was the light bulb on my side of the bed. When I was putting my stuff down, I looked at the light and there was a tiny amount of electricity in the filament of the bulb.
Was it buzzing? You know how?
No, it was like the light was switched off, but the filament in the bulb was just glowing ever so slightly. I mean, there's no question it had electricity in it, but it was a tiny amount. It was less than you would get from a 12-volt battery, you know? It was sort of like a bicycle light where the battery's just about had it. I knew about electrics anyway, but I knew from my prior experience that ghosts mess around with the lights. And I've never known lights to switch themselves on or off or bulbs to be sort of semi-illuminated, except in these rooms where other paranormal phenomena are reported. And in this room, the next thing was this cold draft, which is, again, was unusual because the windows were closed and it was very warm outside. So we went to bed and the next thing was there's this sort of knocking on the wood. It was like just so quiet. At the time, I didn't really think much of it. I really didn't. You could sort of put that down to, okay, it's a wooden building. So it warms up during the day. It contracts at night, slowly contracts. And of course the coldest time in summer would be about 3, 4 a.m., just before dawn, and it slowly started getting warmer again. So I was sort of thinking at the time, maybe that's something to do with the wood, but I now know that it was likely paranormal. And the reason I say that is because of, I'll tell you the next story in a moment. So in this room, so far we'd had the light, and we'd had this cold draft, so we'd heard this tapping, and it got light at about 4 or 5 a.m. and I was awake. I hadn't slept very well that night. I was just lying in bed and I was with somebody different this time. She's from Novosibirsk. She was up for the ghost hunt, but she was asleep. So I'm lying in bed and I'm actually lying face down, but I'm awake. And suddenly there was this sound, this very loud sound, which was completely alien to me. I'd never heard anything like it. I remember thinking at the time, I don't know what this is. The only thing I can just compare it to is a heavy piece of furniture being dragged across the floor.
Creepy.
I mean, it was really like a heavy chest of drawers. And bear in mind, we are in a room in which there are only two people, and these two people are in bed, and one of them is asleep, and the other one's just lying there on his stomach. I froze in terror. The thing I remember, first of all, is you suddenly go into this kind of uncanny alternate sort of twilight zone of thinking, this is real. This stuff is really real. Because up to that point, you've always known it. You've always believed it's real. I always believed it's real on the basis of the evidence. To me, circumstantially, the evidence is completely overwhelming, but I've never experienced in real time anything myself. It only went on for a few seconds, but it was terrifying. And I sort of froze. And then I sort of went, and I woke up and I said, did you hear that? And she said, oh, that's next door. And I said, no, it's not. And I realized that she hadn't heard it, you know?
Oh, so it didn't wake her up.
No, not at all. And she said, oh, that's next door. As soon as she said that, it's really surprising how quickly you suddenly start thinking, was it next door? Was that the next room? Your mind immediately starts trying to rationalize it, but it really wasn't, you know, it was so loud and it was in the room. I did actually hear them moving around in the next room, and that was very clearly
in the next room. Even if they had opened a creaky door, you'd recognize that sound. This sound was not a sound that I could identify with.
At the time, as soon as it happened, I realized, wow, this is really happening. Because although I'd had a paranormal experience in Wallingford, it was a sort of retrospective experience because the light had come on. My friend had embraced me after the cold draft passed through her. So we were sort of looking back. And therefore, it wasn't even that frightening, really. But this was happening in real time. And you suddenly go into a, if I can borrow a term from another subject, it's actually about sex dolls, I think, but there's something called the uncanny valley.
Wait, now we have to take that tangent. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because they say that, well, you can look it up on Google it. Okay. Something to do with a certain point where a sex doll looks almost completely realistic, but not quite. But I think this term, uncanny valley, is very well suited to the sensation of breaking the fourth wall. If the world is a stage, then when we interact with the paranormal, we are breaking the fourth wall. And when you do that, it is a terrifying experience.
I told myself afterwards that it was like a piece of furniture. Because if I hadn't told myself what it was, I would have completely forgotten. I cannot remember that sound today. I can only remember telling myself, well, it's sort of like that. That's as close as you're going to get. So I had the light coming on and I had the strange sound, but the absolutely strangest sound was at the next place. The next place was a place called the Old Church House Inn in Devon, 12th century inn. And Devon is a really sort of very oldie-worldy county in England. The roads are just ridiculously narrow like this. The country road to get to this inn was about the width of a car. And it had this decommissioned church next to it, which was open. And you can go inside that church and there was a 14th century screen, which is incredibly rare because most of them were destroyed during the Reformation. Right. And I was thinking, anyone could come in here and steal this. And they did. I read about it in the news later on. Anyway, I got it back, I think, because it would be very hard to sort of sell that because it's right. A unique piece of art. Anyway, that was in the garret. There were two rooms in the garret opposite each other at the top of a winding staircase. And the room was actually rather horrible because they had decorated it in the 1980s and it had this awful chipboard bedside table, which was really badly scratched, but very cheap when it was bought. And a cheap 80s bed and a green plastic bath. It was a terrible, terrible refit, but it was still very haunted. So I was staying there with a girl from Finland this time, sort of working my way through the United Nations. The first thing was in the afternoon, the light went on and off. Okay, no big deal. Just a light bulb on, off. Dodgy electrics, no problem. But then when it got to about 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening, we started hearing tapping. And again, it was not, it was like sort of, I don't know what it is that causes it, but it seems to be that as the paranormal activity starts to ramp up, or as that world starts to sort of blend into this one, there, reality somehow crosses over into ours, that you start to sort of get these indicators. But again, it was nothing that interesting. Again, you sort of put it down in your mind to it maybe being natural. Maybe it's mice, although I know it's not mice because I've had mice. They are really noisy and they sound nothing like that.
Right.
So did our thing, went to bed. First paranormal thing happened to Sana, who is my friend who came with me. We made a video about it, actually. So she I don't think she really realized it, but I'm pretty sure she's psychic. She picked up more stuff than I did. But I'm lucky that if I am psychic, I appear to be clairaudient. But she was woken up by what sounded like a door being slammed in the bed. And it didn't wake me up at all. But I stirred in my sleep, according to Sana. So the moment it happened, I stirred in my sleep. So then I was awake, and then things really kicked off. And this is the weirdest thing that's ever happened to me, what happened next. So we're in this garret room, and bear in mind that there's only two rooms. There's one opposite in this room. I don't think that room was occupied at the time. So we're pretty much on our own. And although it's an inn, it's really like being in a cottage, you know. It's not like this is a very big building. We're like in somebody's attic, and it's a small room because there's not much room for anything else. So there's this noise on my side of the bed, and it's very loud. It just sort of starts up, and it's the most ridiculous noise you've heard, because it is the archetypal sound of somebody pretending to be a ghost.
So like, ooh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly like that. And it goes on and on and on. I mean, it was going on for minutes, you know? I can't really tell you how long it went on for. I think when you're scared, things seem to go on for longer than they actually are going on for. Although it seems in my mind now, it seems like it was 10 minutes. It may have only been two. I couldn't move. I was just sort of frozen in the bed listening to it. I couldn't even look down. I couldn't even move to look down. But eventually it kind of stopped, and I snapped out of my rabbit in the headlights. And of course, there's nothing there. And again, the same thing happens. You know, you start sort of saying, was that a bird outside the window? You know it's not. You know what a bird sounds like. You know that a bird outside the window sounds like a bird out the window. And you know that this is right next to you. And of course, I'm so glad that Sana was there, because she backed me up. If I had been on my own, besides wetting myself, probably if I'd been on my own, but I probably would have put it down to a bird outside. I would have rationalized it. But I said, it wasn't that, was it? She said, no. And Sana was not a believer, really. She was agnostic. She would just say, I don't know what that is. And that would be it. That's a very haunted room. The most haunted I've done the old church house in. And Yvette Fielding stayed in that room that we stayed in. So it's got the seal of approval from ghost hunting royalty, you know. But I really believe that's the proper way to ghost hunt, is not to goad the ghosts, let them come to you. They probably know why you're there anyway. That yielded quite a bit of a trip, because I was staying in some other places. We were going all the way down to Cornwall, and then we sort of worked our way back up to Stonehenge, and then that was pretty much the end of the trip. But as we worked our way back up, we had been camping in Cornwall, When you camp, you get a bit fed up of it, and you want to sort of stay in a hotel and just sort of have a hot shower and sleep in a real bed. When we were driving back up through Dartmoor, I think it is, we were not focused on finding a haunted hotel. We just wanted a warm bed. And I stopped at this hotel on the ways. It looked to be like a nice Victorian hotel, and I thought, okay, that'll do. This is another thing about skeptics. They always say that hotels are attention seekers, and that they try and make money off the back of their ghosts. And that might sort of be true. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, actually. But in my experience, they often try and hide it. And this is what this hotel sort of did, because I asked them at the reception. I said, is this hotel haunted? No. Okay, fine. So we book the room, and they say, we're upgrading you to the historic room. I said, oh, thank you. Not, we're upgrading you to the haunted room. Not even a, you know, not even a wink, you know? Just like, we're upgrading you to the historic room. So you can see it on the video. I videoed that one too. We go into the room, and I sort of look around, and I say to the camera, well, if it's not haunted, it should be. I just had a sort of feeling, you know, that it was. I don't know why. I don't know if it was the decor, four-poster mm-hmm. bed, looks very period, or whether I was picking something up. I really don't know. I think I do get a bit of a feeling when I go to these places. So that was an interesting one, again, because you got some of these classic paranormal indicators, which anyone that goes and stays in a haunted place can probably expect, even if they don't get like a full-on spectre or ghost pulling the sheets off the bed. That happens sometimes. They quite often will get something small. And we got the small things plus a little bit extra. We did the same old thing, went out, had a meal, talked about going up to the haunted woods, or, you know, there's these real sort of creepy trees, the sort of Harry Potter type thing. We never did go there that night. We went in the day and we went back to bed, went to sleep. And then in the morning, Sana had this story. Now, during the night, we had closed the windows and whacked the heating up full. They had this electric heater in the room, which we plugged in and turned on because our tent was wet from camping and we were trying to dry it out. So it was really toasty in that room, you know, it was like about 25 or 30 degrees. But in spite of that, Sana was woken in the night by this cold draft going through the bed. But not just that. As it passed through, it actually, the bed pressed down. Ooh. Like it was being walked on. So the next morning, I said, well, look, we've got to ask the cleaners because they always know. They'll always know the story about the room, you know? Because when I stayed at the Western Manor, which of course I didn't stay at because a feather chased me out of the room. I spoke to the cleaning lady, the chambermaid, the next morning, and she had this brilliant story about the ghost manhandling her and sort of turning her around. So I asked the cleaner, who was Belarusian, and Belarusia has a dictatorship. She was terrified of telling the story because she probably thought that Lukashenko was going to chuck her in prison if she told it. But we persuaded her that it was not for Belarusian consumption. It's just a YouTube video about ghosts. And so she said, okay, well, there's a woman that hanged herself in that room, in your room.
Oh, oh, that makes so sense.
The pressing on the bed, maybe. Uh-huh. I don't know. Or she was walking through the bed. It's giving me goose pimples now, actually. But I also asked Sana about a bit more about it, because Sana was very, she was a very insular, sort of quiet girl, and she didn't tell you things unless you sort of coaxed them out of her. But she said to me the next morning, she said, well, there's a bit more that. She said, well, when we checked in, you were on your laptop at the desk. There was a sort of desk against the wall in the far corner, and she was sat on the bed. And she said, when I was sat on the bed, I suddenly had the feeling as I was looking at you that I was not looking at you through my own eyes, that I was somebody else watching you. I said, Sana, has that ever happened to you before anywhere else? And she said, yes, once when I was at primary school in Finland. And I said, okay, and was that an old building? And she said, yes, that was the oldest building in the town. So that was a really special experience because it was the hotel that wasn't supposed to be haunted. You'll often find that in the UK. You know, there's just so many old buildings, and it was a very mystical part of the country anyway. After that, we went and stayed in Glastonbury, which of course is famous for the music festival. But Glastonbury is also famous because supposedly the Holy Grail was sort of hidden there. It's got this spiritual place called Glastonbury Tor, and we stayed in a hotel there, which is again sort of dated back to around the time of Henry VIII. And actually, nothing happened there, but I did bump into a guy who had a really good ghost story, and it's in the video. I say nothing happened there, but I think there was a little bit of static. See, what you'll get as a bare minimum, I think, in a haunted location is static. Mm-hmm. Which is it's sort of very sort of high-pitched sound. I can hardly hear it. In fact, I probably wouldn't hear it now because my hearing's sort of not as good as it was. But that is a sort of bare minimum. And then sort of the other end of the scale is ghosts moving really heavy objects and that sort of thing, or appearing as real as you are to me now, which I hope never happens to me, because I think I just sort of drop down dead, fright. So that's always been my problem, you see, is I am really, really interested in the subject. I have no interest in fictional stories. I'm interested in real stories. They have a different quality about them. They evoke something inside you that's different. A real ghost story has a different quality to it, and it really kind of gives you that eerie feeling. It's just this otherworldly feeling. For many years, that was enough for me, just reading these stories and sort of slowly building up an inventory of information in my head about how ghosts work. And of course, I knew so much about them, I would recognize patterns and I would realize this is real. You know, people are not making this up. When I'm in a haunted room with somebody else, we're both experiencing it.
Many years ago, I sold binoculars in a department store, amongst many other types of product. And I would give people the wrong end of the binoculars as a joke, you know, just to sort of pass the time of day, because it was quite a boring job. And most people would look at through the binoculars through the wrong end, and they would be satisfied that that was a decent pair of binoculars, and they were ready to sign their check and walk out the store. Looking through binoculars and seeing everything made smaller was satisfied that they were looking at something made larger. And that's kind of how people look at the paranormal. They tend to get things the wrong way around. So there's this assumption that people magnify mundane events into something paranormal. The reverse happens. Something paranormal happens, and it tends to get dismissed as something mundane. Ghost hunters loves orbs, right? But I don't. There's too many of them. They get confused with insects. Let's just leave orbs out of it. However, I was staying in a hotel in Congleton, which is a Wild West Tudor town that sold its Bible and purchased the bear back in the 1500s. Bear baiting was very common back then. And if it was a choice between a bear or a Bible, you know, it had to be a bear for these guys. So that gives you an idea of what kind of a place it was. And there's an inn there called the Black Swan. And one of the rooms is haunted supposedly by a naked girl. When I went and stayed in there back in 2012, the landlord told me a story about a journeyman who had stayed in the room a few weeks prior and had been found sleeping in his car in the car park in the morning. And when he was approached and asked what he was doing sleeping in his car and he'd booked a room, he said, "I didn't touch her, I didn't touch her." So he didn't even realize that he had seen a ghost. He just thought that he might be arrested on some sort of sex offense charge. Now, I stayed in that room, and it was quite a remarkable room, because firstly, there was a very hazy, almost misty area of the room right in front of one of the windows where you would think it should be bright. I tried to photograph it, but the smartphone compensated for the darkness and just made it look really bright. However, I stayed in that room overnight, didn't get any sleep. All through the night, I felt cold drafts passing over me. And I did feel like I was being watched. Other than that, there was nothing. But then having said that, I did ask them to sort of leave me alone, because I am the world's most timid ghost hunter. I did get a lovely leaving present. So again, I'm a very lazy ghost hunter as well. I don't take many pictures, but I took two pictures. And the first picture, so I'm just leaving the hotel. It's about 11 o'clock. I pack my stuff up and I think, right, I'm going to take a picture of the corner of the room. I took a picture, nothing in the picture, and then I thought, oh no, I should ask. So I said, "Could you please appear in this picture?" Took a picture, and there were three orbs in the picture. The center orb was blue, a blue orb, and insects are not blue. I took hundreds of pictures of that smartphone in all kinds of locations. I never even got an orb of any description apart from in that room, and I got three orbs, and one of them was blue. And the only other time I ever got a coloured orb was when I took one picture in the Shell Grotto in Margate and I got a green orb. So I've been quite lucky with orbs, because I'm very fussy and pedantic about my orbs. And I think the spirit world has responded accordingly.
We'll show you.
No average orbs here. Cool.
That really is it. But I've got stories about this place, but I can perhaps tell you about this another time.
Yes, we'll have to have you back so we can hear all about the haunted building that you currently live in.
TV. I might actually have something to flog at that time as well, or to plug.
Well, that would be awesome. Yeah.
So that was James de Beresford, a bona fide ghost hunter, currently in Wales, but relaying many stories from haunted hotels throughout England. Thank you so much for coming on today and for sharing your stories and for being our first international guest. It's very exciting for us.
Well, it's a great pleasure to have been here, and thank you for having me. And I look forward to hearing the show and being a fan of yours and a loyal listener.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thanks for joining us today. And if you haven't done so already, please be sure to subscribe to the Homespun Haints podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, check out our website at homespunhaints.com, where we'll have links to James's videos and other interesting facts about the places mentioned in today's show. You can join the discussion by following us on Facebook, Instagram, or by commenting on our website.
Until next time, have a spooky day.